Let's check in on efforts to overhaul voting in the U.S. Overnight, state lawmakers in Texas advanced a bill to limit extended early voting hours, ban drive-through voting, and make it illegal to proactively send ballots by mail to voters. And the state of Georgia is now facing three different lawsuits over restrictions to voting that were signed into law last week. Supporters of laws like these say they want to protect election integrity. Critics say people of color will be disproportionately hurt. The Brennan Center for Justice has found lawmakers in almost every state have proposed changes to voting rules, including 361 bills to restrict voting access and 843 to expand them. Here to talk about it, in part one of a series on voting, is Mirna Perez. She's the Director of Voting Rights and Elections at the Brennan Center for Justice. And Mirna, let's begin in Georgia, where in future elections, ballot drop boxes will be limited, early voting hours curtailed, IDs will be required for absentee voting, and it'll be a crime to provide food or water to anybody standing in line to vote. So where does Georgia's new law rank on the scale of new voting restrictions in your estimation?
Georgia's new laws rank pretty high on a scale of voting restrictions, in large part because Georgia already has a restricted system in many ways. And this is in the face of a political upset. There was massive turnout. There were changes that happened in the election in terms of who is getting sent to the Senate. And rather than recognizing that the voters of Georgia want something different, we have some politicians trying to put barriers in front of the ballot box and inventing things that didn't go wrong and, frankly, retaliating in many ways against the things that most Americans think are good, right? Like, it is good for people to be waiting in line when the line is long. I mean, they shouldn't have a long line, but if there is a long line, they should care enough about the right to vote to be able to wait. And to just make it comfortable for people to be able to do that is something that most Americans would think is fine and makes sense. And instead, we're seeing all these reactions to try and deter and discourage and disenfranchise people. And I think it's this very clear and unmistakable reaction to a political outcome that the people who are currently currently in power in the legislature are trying to stop, that is just really capturing America's attention. Like, it is so obvious that this is a response to what happened in the Senate.
We, of course, Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff were both elected as Democrats in a big upset, as you said. Georgia is one of the states where we have seen the bill actually make it all the way through the legislature and be signed into law. But an analysis by the news site 538 concluded that actually most of the bills across the country to restrict voting are not likely to pass. So I'm wondering whether it's an exaggeration to say that they represent the biggest rollback in voting rights since the end of Reconstruction, since it may not actually happen.
I think there's a couple of points that are relevant to remember. One, we saw a giant, massive rollback after 2010, where there were reactions to a historic election of an African-American president, and the state houses changed. And so we are already starting from a place where 19 states after the 2010 election had made it harder for people to vote. So the reaction we're seeing now is very much looking like the kind of pushback we saw then. And I think the concern is the animating interest, right? Yes, most of these bills are not going to pass, but like the Georgia bill is not just one bill. It's got a bunch of different components of it. And when the last time we saw something like this, we ended up seeing 19 states pass more restrictive bills. And at a time where the voters made very clear that they care about voting, and they made this clear by showing up to vote in record numbers, notwithstanding the fact that we're in a once-in-a-century pandemic, instead of riding that wave and making all the reforms more permanent that we saw to accommodate voters during the pandemic, we see people pushing them back. So I think the numbers are indicative of a mood. They're indicative of an effort. Nobody believes that all 300 and change bills are going to pass, but the ones that are passing are significant and are problematic and are compounding a problem that we saw in 2010 that has been further compounded with the fact that the Supreme Court issued a decision in 2013 that lifted some federal guardrails on what states could do to suppress voters. So I think this is a time of high alert, and one should not get overly fixated on the numbers, except for they indicate an effort and a passion and a zeal for rolling back access.
Let me ask you then about a couple of arguments that you'll hear from Republicans on this issue. One is that the effort at the federal level to push through a new voting rights bill on what could be a party line vote is insane. That was the words of Mark Braden, the former chief counsel to the Republican National Committee. And he says that you have a lot of Republican voters who already don't trust the process. And so to have a partisan a bill would just further alienate them. And then more broadly, Myrna, I mean, many Republicans say the Democrats are trying to pull a bait and switch here. In other words, they baited GOP lawmakers with expansions like no excuse mail-in voting to address the special circumstance of the pandemic last year. And now they say Democrats are trying to switch those temporary changes into permanent ones. Are those fair criticisms?
So let's break them down. Let's do the last one first. Elections should be dynamic, right? We should be learning from things that happen. We should be assessing what went right and what went wrong in one election, and then using and importing those lessons to further elections. We were able to make these reforms. People were able to turn out. We had an election that, even the prior administration in their formal way said was safe and secure. And the processes in the states worked about as well as they could for voters. So I think it's not a bait and switch. It's a, look, you were nervous. We tried it out on a temporary basis. Now what's the justification for making these changes more permanent, except for you don't want people to use them, because people just are opposed to the idea of making our elections as accessible as possible.
I just want to point out, we almost can't say enough that the distrust that some voters feel toward the process is rooted on falsehoods about the way the last election went. I feel like we should underscore that one more time.
Right. Well, and also falsehoods perpetrated by some of the very politicians that are now trying to push these bills. Like, it's inappropriate and gross that we have some politicians that spent a lot of the last year spreading misinformation and disinformation and falsehoods, and then are now saying, oh, our constituents believed us, so now we have to do all these anti-voter efforts because they're now concerned, right? Like, I've not met a politician that is sitting in office that says that we shouldn't trust the outcome of the election in which she or he won, right? Like, nobody says that, they were improperly elected because of any wrongdoing. It's always somebody else's election.
So, Myrna, we've talked about some of the high-profile battles over voting rights at the federal level and in states like Texas and Georgia. I'm curious if there's an under-the-radar state that you think we should be paying closer attention to right now.
I do think that we need to be paying attention to all of the states in which elections are being less accessible. I mean, folks are fixated on the battleground states, but I think that that is a mistake. I think we should be recognizing that our neighbors and our country are better off when all of us are participating and all of us are voting. It makes me sad to hear that, the money and the attention, et cetera, is going to the places that are the most high profile because people think it can swing an election. We instead need to be asking the question, what kind of country do we want to be? And do we want to be a country where every American is able to participate? And if that's the case, then we need to be looking for things like the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act to make sure that voters are going to enjoy some basic federal protections and some basic minimum standards, irrespective of where they live.
That's Myrna Perez. She directs the Voting Rights and Elections Division at the Brennan Center for Justice, which is keeping track of efforts at the state level to either expand or restrict ballot access after the 2020 election. Myrna, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.